Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome. This is episode 4 of Deep Dive. This is your co-host, the White Whale, here with Andy. And we're going to dive into two more division previews today. This will make number 5 and 6 out of the 8 divisions. And we'll give you our take on win totals and who we like to win the divisions at the current odds. And with that, welcome my good friend, Andy. This is pod number 4. How are you feeling?
Good. And yeah, your math checks out. This is the 5th and 6th division. Ooh, watching the Browns game right now. They almost missed an extra point here. But yeah, 5th and 6th divisions. We'll spin some wheels, figure out where we're at, and it'll take a lot of the drama out of the next one, because are we going to spin the wheel for the very last division until it lands on it? But we might just have to retire the wheel for episode 5.
It's tough to pull back the curtain here, but you'll never believe it. But I'm not actually spinning a wheel. This is all through the miracles of modern sound editing. But let me ask you about the Browns game. So you're watching the Browns. I'm currently not tuned in. Is there anything interesting going on?
OBJ dead. Torn everything. It did look kind of bad. Well, obviously, we don't know anything, right? You know, like, this is being recorded, what 15 minutes after he got hit in the knee, and he was dropping to his knees on the way to the locker room, which he knows the cameras are on him. So who knows if that was just some OBJ doing his thing, but he could legitimately be out for the season. I don't know. It looked kind of nasty. He was planted.
This is why you don't do your fantasy draft until after the 3rd preseason game. There is probably people freaking out all over the internet right now trying to find out what's going on.
I am trying to figure out who I have to text, because one of our leagues, and no one wants to hear about your fantasy team, but one of our leagues, I had the 3rd pick, and I flipped a coin and took Brown instead of OBJ. So I got to figure out who I should be giving a hard time to right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Give him some help. I like it. All right. Well, with that, let's spin our magical division wheel here. We're down 4 left on here. If you missed episode 2, we covered the NFC West and the AFC South. And then in episode 3, we got deep into the AFC East and the NFC South. And so far, you know, once we get through all these divisions, we'll circle back and use the week leading up to Labor Day to kind of go back and recap some of the positions that we feel the most strongly about, and then we'll also do kind of a prop spectacular where we go through some of the offensive rookie of the year, MVP, first coach fired props, and we'll make our picks, and we're working on some sponsorship deals that we should have in place by then, so that we can have some kind of stakes on the line for a little head-to-head competition. But that's all coming in the next couple weeks. We may also, if the timing works and if the stars are aligned, we may get a little bonus pod in previewing the U.S. Open, since we're both pretty hot on tennis, and this is kind of the big final tennis tournament of consequence of the year. So that'll be fun, and you may see a surprise pod pop up that's not NFL focused, but maybe more. Kind of covering the
We do apologize for not having the Winston-Salem tennis tournament's surprise pod, but that's because it's garbage and there's really no good tennis left for the rest of the year outside of New York.
There's fireworks in Winston-Salem. What are you talking about, man? The whole world is paying attention. There was a fixed match. Didn't you read about it?
Yeah, that was pretty fun, I guess, but I didn't take advantage of that. I always get nervous about that. Like, the whole world thinks he's going to throw the match, and then I put a bunch on it, and it's the one time that it doesn't come through. Tennis players are cheaters. Sucker.
Yeah,
that's a fact.
You're the sucker.
It's a dirty sport.
It is a dirty sport. And when it comes down to just a single individual's performance, like, there are so many factors that can go sideways on you. So, yep, that was interesting. That's the only interesting thing going on in tennis this week. Otherwise, it's kind of a quiet sports week. So, with that, let's get this going. Let's spin this wheel. four divisions left. Ready, set, spin. And the wheel has landed on the AFC North. Okay, AFC North. This is an interesting one. It looks like the market is in love with the Pittsburgh Steelers to win the North. I'm currently seeing their division title line as priced at -155. And I can see why. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously defending champs of the North, they haven't lost anyone of consequence. They are getting back Martavis Bryant on offense, which is interesting. Big Ben apparently healthy enough to start the season. Roll the dice on how many games he ends up missing this season. But I think the Steelers are in good position.
The picture of him on Twitter with all the ice packs on their week one.
Yeah, looking like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, well, that's just par for the course for him. He's tough.
Yeah, Big Ben clearly, he relishes the attention he gets for fighting through injury, I think. And so he tends to play those things up. I'm not actually concerned that he's going to miss meaningful time this season, because he does seem to always make it out onto the field for the key moments.
Well, if there was ever some juice to drink, I probably would on this division. I don't, going down the other three, there's not anyone in here I see like challenging Pittsburgh for the division. I guess you could always, there's always injuries, and Roethlisberger's an injury.
Yeah.
Always a concern. And
yeah, to me, this makes
multiple stars with suspensions in the past. Yeah. But
to me, the Steelers to win the North makes a great parlay leg for if you're going to like kind of like put together kind of a mega parlay of season long future action. Pittsburgh -155 to win the North is a beauty. I do not see the Ravens or the Bengals in the same class, even remotely in the same class as the Steelers. And the Browns, while they're up and coming, are still, a quarterback and, a decade away from honestly competing for the AFC North. So that 155 is surprisingly short, actually. I would have guessed, I would have guessed before we looked it up, it would have been kind of in the -200, -250 range, especially with the question marks surrounding Flacco's health. So that's an interesting one to look at.
Yeah, just looking, I brought up the strength of schedule for everybody. And, well, not only just as a division, they all have bottom third of the league strength of schedules, which is sometimes it's not always as telling because not every team's going to be as good or as bad as they were last year. But they have one of the easiest schedules, and I just looked at some of the look-ahead lines on games that were up, and they're not all up, but they should be favored in 6, if not 7, of their road games. Like, they are favored already if you want to take some of these early lines in 5 of them. One of them's not up, and they're a very short dog going into Arrowhead right now, like 1 or 2 points. So, you get your business done at home, win 6, 7 of those, and you take care of 5 or 6 of those road games. It's pretty easy sledding when Baltimore and Cincinnati have overrated quarterbacks.
And yeah, there's some great ones on their schedule. You mentioned going, their head to head against the Packers is going to be fun. Looks like the Steelers are going to get a little extra rest. They play the Titans on Thursday Night Football the previous week, and we'll get a little bonus rest before they play the Pack. That'll be cool. They get the Patriots in kind of a pretty advantageous spot as well. The Patriots are going to be on their third road game in a row. They're going Patriots go at Buffalo, at Miami, and then at Pitt week 13, 14, and 15. So they're going to get a travel-worn Patriots team coming in as things are kind of lining up and we're kind of figuring out who's going to get the one seed between those two probably.
Yeah, a lot of the teams that are looking like possible and very probable playoff teams this year have to travel to Pittsburgh with the New England, Green Bay, and even, your Minnesotas, and I'm looking at the other ones here. I guess they do, their toughest game on the road is Kansas City, and then, you know, Green Bay and New England at home. But New England in that tough travel spot, and then, I mean, Lucas Oil Stadium's not a tough place to play for them in the past.
Yeah, I'm nervous about them in that Kansas City spot. That's going to be a rough one. Kansas City's going to have revenge on the mind, and that's going to be a decent looking spot to back the Chiefs. The one other thing I like to look at every year on the Pittsburgh schedule is the game that always seems to be the most consequential for who wins the AFC North is the two head-to-heads between the Steelers and the Ravens. Those games are just crazy physical bone breakers, and there's no, you'll never believe it, but there's no love lost between those teams. And I like to see when they're playing, and sure enough, they stacked an early one for us. Week 4, we see Pittsburgh head to Baltimore, and they've handicapped the Steelers a little bit, making them head back-to-back road weeks. They got to go at Chicago and then at Baltimore for week 4. But they really handicapped the Ravens. They're Ravens. They're coming straight off of a London trip to play the Jags before they got to face the physical Steelers in Balto. So that's going to be an ugly game. Ooh, that's going to be ugly. And I think the Steelers take that. I think that kind of caps off a 4-0 start for them. And after that, there's only a handful of other tests on their schedule that look particularly challenging. And when it comes to what makes the Steelers special, their offense is so freaking dynamic. It is just difficult to, stop, when you have weapons as diverse as Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, and now you're getting Martavis Bryant back into the mix, and they have some up-and-coming talent at the other wideout and other tight end positions.
Juju.
If there's anything to be a little concerned about the Steelers, it's not their defense either. Their defense is up and coming as well. But I do have some concerns about their offensive line depth. If that unit stays healthy, they're going to be amazing. And they're going to, have unbridled success offensively. But if that unit gets a little banged up, it gets bleak. It's not like Patriots starting a tuba player bleak, but it gets bad once you get to the second and third line of the offensive line there in Pittsburgh. So that's the only thing to really kind of keep an eye out for, as far as I can tell you. A couple questions for you. One, their win total is 11. Right now you can get plus money to take the over on that, which is kind of nice. Do you see them winning 12 games?
I don't see them losing 6. That's one of those where I looked at it as a possible play just because it is a good price. And when I'm looking for 6 losses, it's anything. It's a risk. There's always injuries. But, he played Cleveland twice. Granted, it's at Soldier Field, but the Bears, the Jags, the Colts are not in love with right now, Texans. And I think they just get it done inside the division.
Yeah, so over 10.5 with a lot of juice is a decent parlay leg if you're going to do a mega parlay.
I think that's about 140.
To win the North. Yeah, to win the North at -155 is kind of in the same discussion. So those are the two good looks for the Steelers. Let me ask you to make a prediction real quick. Do you think the contract holdout is going to affect Le'Veon Bell in any way, shape, or form, either from a fantasy perspective, or is he going to get hurt week 1 or 2? What are your thoughts on your predictions on Le'Veon Bell?
That's so tough to say. And there's so many running backs. Like Adrian Peterson hasn't played and granted, he's not Le'Veon Bell, and he's not very good anymore, I don't think. But, man, he didn't play a preseason game for like 6-7 years there. Just kind of, I think it might be more of he just doesn't want to do that. And he deserves to get paid. I think it'll all get hashed out, but it's hopefully he's working out on his own. You gotta get in game shape. And it's not only just being in game shape to be at your best performance. Like you said, it's easier to get injured.
Yeah.
You don't want to hold out.
If he makes it through week 1 and 2, unscathed after not being in game shape, I think you're probably home free. I will say kind of long-term about Le'Veon Bell. Like, I think the Steelers are probably doing the right thing, trying to kind of, not commit heavy-duty long-term money to him, because his style is, it looks like the kind of style that is eventually going to get figured out, right? Like he kind of only, he's dynamic, yes, but he has this kind of, I'm going to delay my getting started until the whole kind of finds me, which is a cool, it's a cool thing to watch. And it allows for huge plays because the defense kind of, you know, crumples trying to, you know, it's already spread thin and here it is, you know, you can only go at max power for so long. And so you extend it 5 seconds into the play and you're going to be able to do more damage if you're as fast and as shifty as Bell is. But, you know, I think over time, it does seem a little gimmicky. I don't know.
Guys who would play running back 5 years ago, like, top-notch high school athletes that would play running back, you know, a few years or quarterback, some of those guys are beefing up and playing DN now. Those guys are getting awful fast. There's some very fast linebackers. Sometimes that whole hesitate behind the line thing just gets you blown up.
Yeah, and I, you know, it could be that that's something that gets figured out eventually, but maybe I'm looking for some reason to be a little less glowing about the Steelers here, because at the end of the day, I don't think it's really worth backing their future for, you know, Super Bowl or anything like that. Because I just, you know, I don't see this as a team that's going to go to Foxborough and win in the AFC Championship game. They just can't get past Tom Brady. They're missing a little bit. They're missing a little bit of dynamism on the coaching staff. They're missing a little bit from Roethlisberger in the key situations. And, you know, I'm not lining up to put money on Pittsburgh to win the AFC or the Super Bowl, especially at the current prices.
Yeah, it's like five and 10 to 1 to win the Super Bowl in the conference, respectively. Those aren't good prices.
Yeah. So the Bengals sit in second position to win the North at plus 325. This price seems like a mistake. When you tally everything they lost over the last few seasons, I am not actually interested in backing this team to come anywhere close to the posted win total. They are probably in my bottom five rankings for offensive line talent, and that's a problem when you have a quarterback who, you know, is going to be trying to find AJ Green 45 yards down the field, and he needs, you know, 6 seconds of a perfectly clean pocket to make his to find his receiver and make a key pass. I look at their schedule, I look at their offensive line, and I just see a load of hurt in store for Andy Dalton this year in Cincinnati. Are you more bullish on the Bengals than I am?
I always just seem to think like they're going to be good for some reason. I don't understand it myself. They won 6 games last year. I'm not a big Andy Dalton guy, but he's not the worst thing in the world. I have no interest in backing them to win the North or make the playoff price is 165 plus minus 190 to miss the playoffs. I don't think either of those are a play either, but yeah, schedule, like I said, all four teams have fairly easy schedules. Theirs is the fourth easiest schedule in the league. They do have a 3 straight road game stretch against, it's not the top opponents, but still you got to play on the road 3 straight weeks. Eifert was out last year a lot. You've seen how good teams use a tight end to be very successful, and he's one of the best when he's healthy. AJ Green's dynamic, but yeah, like you said, with the offensive line, if you can't keep the quarterback's jersey clean, you're not going to be getting it to AJ Green down the field 30 yards.
No, and Eifert is a player that you can't help but like. I mean, he does have a ton of, you know, kind of Gronk level potential when he's healthy and when he's making plays over the middle of the field. But again, he's another guy that gets injured a lot. So can you count on him to play 16 games? I don't think so. They've taken a pretty healthy they've taken some pretty healthy blows on their defense as well. I mean, just when you say, yeah, I think the Bengals, I kind of consider them or expect them to be good every year. Like, yeah, they've been pretty good for a long time. But a lot of the
not in the playoffs, who
made, not in the playoffs, but at least in the regular season, they've been a concept. I would wager to say they've, what are they average? Probably 9 wins over the last, like over the Marvin Lewis tenure.
Yeah, they've made the playoffs a lot of years in a row there for, and you know, just first year exit, but always getting to the playoffs. I'm trying to think, I can't think of the name of the guard, but losing Whitworth on the tackle spot there, like you said, like that's just tough to lose a couple guys on a line. And then the rest of the guys that you kept aren't very good.
Yeah. Right. And, or getting old. You know, and you look up and down the roster, offense and defense, and there's players whose names you will not recognize. There's players who are getting up into the, you know, 10 years in the NFL type of range, which is, you know, where you start to see them lose a step or two. They're going to be missing some key pieces in the secondary based on injuries. It looks like a couple of the their safeties are going to be limited with injuries to start the season. It looks like Adam Jones has suspension looming.
I think it's one
game for now, right?
Which, yeah, it's nothing for him.
Yeah, right, okay. Well, we'll see if it ends up being the only game he's suspended for in 2017. Yeah. I might look for a prop on over-under suspensions for him and see if I can't find a good plus money prop on that. I'm cool on the Bengals overall. I think they're a team I'm going to be backing on the under. Their win total, it opened up at 8.5. There was juice on the over, and that has flipped. So now it still sits at 8.5, but you have to lay -130 to get under that number. I don't think Bengals win 8 games. I don't think they win 7 games. I think we're looking at best a repeat of last season's performance where they had 6 wins. So I'm going to be looking at alternative unders for this crew. The Bengals just do nothing for me this year. And I think I don't want to spoil it, but when we get to our Proptacular pod, I'm going to consider, try to run through the scenarios that would end up with Marvin Lewis, the first coach fired this season. Although, looking at their schedule, their bye's early enough. It'd have to be real bad out of the gate.
Yeah, one and four out of the gate.
To get a pink slip from Marvin Lewis. They open against the Ravens. The Ravens are currently the third listed team in the division. Even though they were only a play away from the playoffs last year, they added some pieces on defense, but they still sit at +375 to win the AFC North. Is that surprising?
No, these two teams are about the same, I think.
Their offense is pretty devoid of skill player talent. They were bad last year. You would have thought they would have went out and got some weapons and said they go out and get Jeremy Maclin. It looks like they're expecting something from Breshad Perryman, but I would be surprised if he ever manifests as a meaningful, important player on a playoff caliber team. Mike Wallace is still starting. That guy's got hands made of cement. Terrence West is their starting running back right now. And then you got Danny Woodhead in the backfield, who's a million years old. There's nothing about this team that, to me, suggests they're going to be, you know, putting up any type of offensive performance that's going to compete with the likes of the Steelers or the Patriots or, you know, any of the other teams in the AFC who have a sniff at the playoffs.
Yeah, they'd really have to step it up on defense and keep those teams, you know, offenses off the field and out of the end zone, make them settle for some field goals and get lucky. Because
they
Dixon suspended 4 games. Like you said, they're starting Woodhead and West. Their wide receiver core is pretty awful. I don't think they expect to be that good this year because Ozzie, he just drafted for defense. I think they want to just go back to the way things were and have that stud defense and let them carry it. That's what they're used to out there. And that, you know, it's not Ray and Ed right now. That defense has fallen quite a bit. And yeah, their first four draft picks were for defense this year.
Yeah, and the defense does look good. But like you said, if they can manage to pitch 10 shutouts, then this team can win 10 games. Joe Flacco, as the quarterback position really is worth maybe a couple more minutes here. You mentioned it. Joe Flacco had, put his chips on the table and said, I'm good enough to get, top tier money as a quarterback. The Ravens said, prove it. He won the Super Bowl.
Maybe the greatest playoff run by a quarterback ever. His quarterback rating was ridiculous. He went 20 touchdowns, no interceptions, or something stupid.
It was
like 12. I got a little excited there, but he put him in a position to win. Also Denver biffed it there too. I mean, Denver probably
Denver. Yeah, Denver whiffed it big time that year. Patriots whiffed it as well. They had them. They were hosting it for the AFC title game and managed to blow it, even though they had, I think they were up by a touchdown at one point. Anyway, Flacco, he won his bet on himself. He got the incredible top-tier quarterback money and has done promptly squat since. And I have a tough time putting him any higher than, say, about the 20th best quarterback currently playing in the league.
Well, and he's hurt. He's hurt.
He's hurt. And it's not a whatever hurt. He's got a herniated disc in his back. That is not a type of injury that a quarterback really bounces back and excels from. That stuff lingers. And if you're getting hit week in, week out because, you have a left side of your line that's a huge question mark, I'm not interested in backing you. I'm sorry. And this is Joe Flacco. If you look down the depth chart past Flacco, it gets much, much worse. The second stringer right now, Ryan Mallett, has no business on a football field, let alone starting a game week one, potentially. Beyond him, Thad Lewis is not an NFL caliber quarterback. And then they have a fourth quarterback, Josh Woodrum, who knows who that guy is, but there is absolutely, a lack of thought that went into putting together this depth chart on offense. And it's maybe no more apparent than the quarterback position. And whether Flacco misses four games or one or two games, I don't think it really is going to matter either way to their win total, because I don't think, Mallett's not winning those games and Flacco is not an impressive enough improvement to really make a difference, as far as I can tell you. The fourth team in the AFC North, they can't get worse, probably.
They can.
The 1-15 Browns last year. Let's go ahead and make a working assumption that they're going to be better than this year, than last year. And then I'll ask you the question: What is their potential ceiling?
I can see 5 games. I could see 6, maybe. They get to play the Jets, the Bears, the Jags, the Texans.
I'll admit it. I'll preface this a little bit. I may be drinking the Kool-Aid because the Browns do seem like a darling pick, so to speak, of the heavy duty analysts out there. In the Twitter sphere. And I don't mean a darling like they're going to make the playoffs, but a darling like, holy smokes, this team won 8 games. How is that possible? I like the Browns to go over their season win total a lot. It's only 4.5. I think 5 wins is very, very attainable. And if the chips work out and if Deshaun Kizer is the real deal, 5 wins is absolutely in play for this team. I
love Crowell.
Their division. Yeah, love Crowell, love Duke Johnson. They have absolute bombing talent on defense. The guys they drafted this year are going to be immediate impact players on top of a defense that had some, that had some talent, but really just didn't have a scheme that was worth the damn last year and had holes that were exploitable. Now you add Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers. That defense is going to be darn good. I think they can absolutely, compete with the likes of the Bengals and the Ravens in their division games. And then, like you mentioned, they have some winnable games outside of comp, outside of division that I think gets them over their win total.
I definitely agree with that. That 4.5, just Jets, Bears, Jags, Texans.
Yeah, right.
You would think they might. You would think they could get three of those, and then playing Cincinnati and Baltimore twice. Cincinnati and Baltimore, like we just went over, they're teams that could lose to the Cleveland Browns. I think 5 is attainable. 6 might happen. I love Drew. Mm-hmm. I love Peppers. I watched him a little tonight. We haven't talked much about special teams besides some kicker debacles, but you get a couple punt returns, some kick returns for touchdowns. He looked good tonight. I like him.
Yeah, so their quarterback position is an interesting situation. Brock Osweiler, I would be floored if he makes the roster. They brought him in to they got a draft pick for taking his contract off the hands of the Texans. I mean, that's why they made the move. I think they also brought him in so that they could kind of set up a faux quarterback competition and have Kaiser prevail. They put him in a really advantageous situation in their first preseason game where they had him play the whole second half against the against scrubs that were going to get cut. And he made some pretty impressive throws. He had one game-winning touchdown throw at the end where he had guys' hands in his face, and he maintained his composure and made a deep down the field strike for a touchdown. I think this has all the makings of kind of a theater, so to speak, where Kaiser wins the starting quarterback job and goes into the regular season with all kinds of confidence, having come from third on the depth chart to first. And I think probably they go with I think they cut Brock, and I think they go with Kessler as their backup. Did you know that they brought in Greg Williams, the infamous Greg Williams, as their defensive coordinator?
Yeah, he's a piece of work. He's a good coordinator, terrible person.
Terrible person. This is the Greg Williams of Bounty Gate fame. For all of you Brett Favre and Viking fans out there, this is the infamous Greg Williams.
Yeah, the asterisk on that Super Bowl.
Yeah. Last note on the Browns, and then let's take a quick break. They are the only team that plays every one of their games on Sunday. Did you know that? They have all 16 games on Sunday, and they head to London to play the Vikes in an early game, and they head to LA to play the Chargers in a late game. Otherwise, every other game falls in the 1 p.m. Eastern time slot with minimal travel. So I think that you're going to be, you're going to have a team that's going to be able to kind of find some rhythm. They're going to be, they're not put in any particularly nasty spots. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity to back them against the spread this season. And I expect them to get better and better as the season goes on. All right, let's take a quick break.
After these messages.
Welcome back, Andy. How was your break?
Good, good. Got some steps in for my my Fitbit.
Oh, dude, you're gonna be in top form come so regular season
today.
Yeah, how many? We got 2 weeks left here. Let's get back, spin this wheel, and do division number 6 here. Hopefully, do you have a division you're pulling for? I guess I'm not. I hope we don't get the NFC East, since it's going to be important to find out if Odell Beckham really did die before we preview the Giants.
Yeah, I'm watching the Giants game again right now. So, well, hopefully that one ends up in the finale.
All right, well, chime in with breaking news if they cut and show that his leg's been amputated.
They're saying ankle now. It's not a knee anymore. It's an ankle.
Oh, okay. Well, if his foot's been amputated, let me know. Right. Spin the wheel! Spin the wheel.
The Norse division.
That was my
boomer.
Oh, gosh. Are we not going to get any boomer this year? Is that true? Is he retired finally? I don't really watch ESPN anymore, but I think he's retired, right?
I watch ESPN on mute quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, either way, no Boomer this year. Sad to see him go, but in his honor. Next up is the NFC North. We have 14 teams in the NFC North. And an even bigger favorite. Wow, weirdly, weirdly big favorite. So the Green Bay Packers sit at the top of the odds here. Current market favorite, Green Bay Packers, minus 200. I don't love that, actually.
Very similar odds to the Steelers for Super Bowl and conference. Obviously a different conference, but
I'm fine if you want to make the Packers a slight favorite over the Vikes, but minus 200 on the pack when you can get the Vikes for plus 360 does not seem like a fair and balanced distribution of price. The Packers obviously have the second best quarterback in the NFL, maybe the best quarterback in terms of his talent, but second best quarterback in terms of his potential, second best quarterback in terms of his career performance or career achievements. Aaron Rodgers, obviously where you start with the Packers, he's flipping amazing. His talent that coming into this season on this offensive roster is better than what he had last season. His performance down the stretch last season, winning seven in a row to take his team to the playoffs, was freaking awesome. He is a bona fide super duper duper star. That said, this team has massive holes, especially on defense. They have a thin offensive line, which is spooky. They have maybe the second or third worst secondary in the league.
I'm gonna say they even lost somebody off their secondary.
They were a secondary that couldn't afford to lose anyone. And we're not like super duper roster heads, so we'll just say there was an important piece that was lost and forget about who it was. But there are not a lot of playmakers on this defense. The only guy that you can really say that has kind of the star power chops on defense, I guess, is Clay Matthews, but he's not a guy that I'm really trying to, put the destiny of my franchise in on the defensive side of the ball. They got exposed badly against the Falcons in the NFC Championship game last year. That game, that was one of those saddest defensive performances I saw all season, and it happened on the biggest stage for those guys. And they that unit scares me.
That was the way to beat the Packers last year. Just throw, and just pound it.
Yeah, so
40 some points to the Falcons. That's even Rodgers couldn't keep up with that. And I did look; it was Sam Shields and Micah Hyde, which leaves even more.
Yeah. Those are two serviceable players in the secondary, and that secondary is going to get burned this year early and often. It looks like they start off hosting the Seahawks. I'm going to be backing the Seahawks in that game, and that is going to be a fun one. Seahawks are going to score plenty of points on this team. Then they turn around and they go at Atlanta for a revenge spot. And it'll be interesting to see if they can exact some revenge against the Falcons. I'm probably going to be back in the Packers in that game. But then you look down their schedule, and there are lots of tough ones on here. Pretty much, I think you can probably count on seeing the Packers on TV most weeks because they're going to be in a lot of preferred
games. America's Game of the Week.
America's Game of the Week is going to have Aaron Rodgers in it at least 12 times this week.
You got Dallas at Dallas in a late game in week 5 at Minnesota at noon.
That's going to be a brilliant one.
Yeah, and obviously right away Sunday night game at Atlanta. And that is a rough stretch. Seattle at Atlanta, at Dallas, at Minnesota in the first 6 games. You get the Bears at home and Cincinnati at home in there to rest up and recoup against some weaker opponents. But then, Saints at home before the bye.
Yeah.
It's a fairly balanced schedule, but there are some pretty tough spots. Even if Carolina can get there, you know, get it together, they got to go down to Carolina after a road game in Cleveland with a look ahead at Minnesota in the last, you know, the second to last game. That's a Sunday night game. Yep. It's possible divisional implications.
Absolutely right. And you mentioned some of the tough spots. There's even a couple of sneaky tough ones after their bye, where they play the Lions. Then they have to go at Chicago. Chicago's coming off extra rest. They're coming off their bye. Then they host Baltimore. Baltimore's coming off their bye. Then they go at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's getting an extra 3 days of rest after Thursday night game. So they got three spots in a row where they're going to be the more tired team. There's going to be a lot of pressure on this offense to score, as we talked about. Their defense is a joke. I think if you are going to try to come at me with an angle, like, well, Aaron Rodgers is so good that he's just going to throw for 5,000 yards and they're going to win 10 to 12 games because of it, all right, I'll concede that. But I think, you know, in terms of a future, I do not advocate supporting them to win the NFC. We'll get to the Vikings next, but that's a team that I'm much higher on, just in terms of overall roster is balanced and depth is there, and they address their biggest weaknesses. Whereas, you know, with the Packers, I don't support their moves in the offseason, and I don't think they have a balanced roster, and I think that's going to come back and bite them in the ass.
Yeah, they had a pretty decent draft. They did draft a corner and a safety, but you expect a couple of rookies to step in there and right off the bat face Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah,
I can't get behind their win total even at 10. It has been bet down, but the minus numbers at division and playoffs. Maybe playoffs in a big parlay. I can see them at work, you know, maybe having a wild card. But, yeah, the Super Bowl conference division numbers, no interest. And every offensive coordinator watched that game against the Falcons. They, well, let's just do that. See them outscore us.
Yeah.
it sounds easy in my head. We'll just put up 40 points.
Yeah, no, and I think, I mean, all this sets up is opportunities to play the over in these games, opportunities to back Rodgers and some futures. I will say that, you know, if this team manages to exceed expectations in terms of their win total, if they manage to secure a number one seed or even a number two seed, the chances of Rodgers being an MVP are pretty, pretty good.
That defense has given up 25, 30 points a game, and he's slinging it, and he does throw 5,000 yards. You know, you can throw 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns and win 9 games with that defense. And that might still be an MVP season for him.
But, yeah, if you're telling me I can have the Packers to win the NFC at plus 475, or I can have Rodgers to win the MVP at about that same number, I'm much more interested in Rodgers for MVP. Because I do not think this actually Rodgers for MVP is plus 700.
Yeah,
you're talking about almost the same type of price now as their Super Bowl. So, yeah, I don't see any reason to lay any money on this team to win the Super Bowl or the conference. And as we'll get to next, I do not like them to win the division. My pick to win the NFC North is going to be the Minnesota Vikings. You happen to be from that area, so I feel like you're kind of a local expert.
It's going to be hard for me to be objective here. Every year's our year, and I try not to bet on the Vikings very much. I don't know if you experience this. I'm sure other people have, but it's hard to see clearly when it's a team you like. I will not make a ton of plays on them. I bet every preseason game for them, which has been working for a while now. But that said, I've watched the preseason games. I talked to some people that were down at camp. The defense is so deep. They're going to be better. I'm not a big fan of Sammy Sleeves, But, you know, we can work around that. I watched the game the other night. I liked how Dalvin Cook looked. They started the rookie center at center. That's where he starts. And he looked very good. It was a preseason game, but still, he was pushing people around.
He did look good.
I liked him a lot.
What's that guy's name?
Elflin? I don't know. We'll be hearing a lot about it. People love to talk. Yeah, centers.
I love some good center talk. Let's dive in real quick. So this kid, Ohio State kid, he has every look of an anchor on this team for 10 years. I think they made a great pick there. He is a plug and play this season, and he kind of, you know, he reminds me of is Nick Mangold. You know, when the Jets drafted him, like kind of early in the second round, I'll say, or maybe it was late first round, but whatever the case was, they grabbed Mangold as their center of the future, and he was just a stalwart part of their O-line for a decade. And this kid looks like the same, cut from the same cloth, same kind of skill set, same kind of same kind of dynamic ability to push guys down the field through the middle. And if you have a guy like Dalvin Cook, you know, who's got the speed and he can find the holes, that is a beautiful combination. And last year the Vikings were what? They were the last team lose a game. They started out 5-0. I was drinking the Kool-Aid then. I'll own this. I was all about the Vikings then. I was telling people, man, I don't know when this team's going to lose. I don't see many games on their schedule that they're going to lose. I was all about this team because their defense was unbelievable. And they fell apart in the most, in the most predictable way. Their offensive line, which was kind of held together with, glue and straw, lost one too many pieces. Yeah. And the next thing you know, Sammy Sleeves was an absolute deer in the headlights who had, one Mississippi to make a decision and throw the ball. And it was just, it all came apart. And Norv Turner, he was banging quit. Against the wall. He quit. He quit on the team. There was all kinds of things that just, it all fell apart. It all started with the offensive line. And I love the pieces they brought in to address that one key issue. And I'll go back to 2016 and bring up the Atlanta Falcons, who no one really saw coming. That team was like plus 800 to win the NFC South last year, and they brought in a couple of key pieces, maybe no one more important than Alex Mack at center, and their line gelled. They gave Matt Ryan time. He had weapons around him who stayed healthy all season, and they were able to take that and ride that momentum all the way to the Super Bowl.
I love my purple, but I'm gonna calm down a little. I like where you're going with that, but let's not go putting Sam Bradford on Matt Ryan's level. It was such a domino effect with that offensive line. The offensive line sucked. Sam got put on his ass. 3-and-out. The defense is on the field again. The defense was good, but they were always out there. They got tired, and you end up losing games that way. The defense got deeper. Yep. The offensive line got better. I'm pretty bullish on them. They have just studs at every level on the defense with Danielle Hunter and Griffin, Sharif Floyd, Kendricks.
Yep.
Rhodes is a top five corner right now. Harrison Smith.
Absolutely right.
They're all, and I mean, just being from here, I could name about 10 more guys on that defense. But those guys all have legitimate.
Blue chip players.
They could all end up in the Pro Bowl. Every one of those guys. They're all very good. Absolutely. On defense. Right. They open as a 3.5-point favorite hosting New Orleans. They have a new back down there. I don't know. We haven't. So hopefully, some of those guys are a little young to maybe they didn't play him as long. But God, hopefully he does, and they just tee off on him.
Yeah. There's some great looking games on their schedule. Week one is going to be awesome. They host the Saints. You mentioned it. Week two they go at Pittsburgh. You'll get a test. And then week three they host Tampa Bay. So right there. First 3 weeks of the season, they're gonna face some talented squads who, when healthy, can be tough. And so we'll know right away if this team is for real. I'm backing them as a team that's for real. I love them at plus 360 to win the division for the reasons we've already talked about, the blue chip players they have at every level on defense. And yeah, they fixed their biggest problem. And when a team does that, they are worth keeping an eye on. There's no doubt about that. In the team that's going in the other direction, everyone I've talked to who has a sharp NFL brain has kind of come to the same conclusion that the Detroit Lions are due for a regression. I actually can't identify one kind of sharp fellow who or sharp gal who I have seen make a strong case that the Lions are going to be able to reproduce the success they had last year, which felt like a total luck box season. They are like prime candidates for the Pythag regression. They have a schedule that on paper does not look as tough, but has tons of disadvantaged spots as you kind of dive into it a little bit. Yeah. Their first half of their season, holy smokes. I could honestly see them losing their first 8 games. Who are they going to be favored against? They're picking week 1 hosting the Arizona Cardinals. Then they go at the Giants, host the Falcons, at the Vikings, host the Panthers,
in the at Super the Saints, Dome.
At the Saints, and then off their bye, they host the Steelers, and then at the Packers. Those 8 games, they are going to be a field goal dog at a minimum in every one of those games. So you're telling me this team, which made the playoffs last year, now comes in the season, they're going to be an underdog in their first 8 games of the season. That's impressive. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I watched a lot of football, and it just felt like you got to like week 10 there, and it's like I missed what happened. Like, how Detroit's leading the division? Like, what is
possible?
Like it just came out of nowhere because Green Bay, you know, they had their struggles, and yeah, I was just like, well, that's not right. I'm gonna have to check the standings in a, you know, on a different website. But yeah, they were 9-4, end up losing their last 3 games back to the playoffs, and predictably so, they got smoked in the first game there.
Yeah, that was ugly. That was ugly.
Yeah, they didn't. They got a team dominated in there.
No, they got dominated by Seattle in that wild card game. I don't love the coaching staff here, even though people like to blow smoke up Jim Bob Cooter's ass. I think people like to talk about him because they like think his name is silly and stuff. Like, they have some weapons. They have, you know, some elements of their scheme were impressive, but he is, you know, he is not the next great football mind. I'm sorry. Stafford is going to be in an interesting situation this year. If he's losing games, he's going to be pressing hard because he's trying to get paid. And you don't get paid if you have a playoff team that's expected to go back to the playoffs and they go, you know, 1-7 in their first 8 games. So this is this could get ugly quickly for the Lions. I think that makes Jim Caldwell a candidate for potentially first coach fired. And you know, if we get to week 10 and they're hosting Cleveland, and Cleveland comes into Detroit as like a 3-point dog, and Detroit's trying to get their first win. Things have gone sideways in Detroit. That's going to be a disaster. So
yeah, their win total sitting at 7.5, little juice on the under, which it feels like a play.
Yeah, all unders all day long on the Lions. If you get the type of start to the season that it looks like is possible, and you're holding under 7 or under 6.5 wins, man, you are gonna feel you're gonna be in a perfect position to do some protection plays down the stretch on some of these games where they're probably going to be dogs to teams that at this point in the season people think they are better than. So that'll be great, and I am all about. I have a handful of kind of wacky parlays already in play, and Detroit Lions under 7.5 wins are in almost all of these. So this is probably one of the teams that I'm most substantially invested in. They're under.
Without getting, you know, before we even get into the down to the Windy City there, there is a prop on Five Dimes where they finish dead last in the division for plus 375.
Interesting. I
almost 4-1 odds that Chicago can win six games.
That's six, a great bet. I'm so glad you brought that up because they don't play Chicago until week 11 at Chicago, and then week 15 they have them at home. So you're talking about
late in the season. You have some good hedging opportunities there too.
Absolutely. You're going to get the chance to probably play Detroit on the money line at a plus money week 11, and the loser is going to end up being at the bottom of the, you know, the NFC North. So speaking of the bottom of the NFC North, with a 25-1 odds to win the division sit the Chicago Bears. Do the Bears, are they this bad? 25-1 to win the North. That's bad.
I mean, it's not good, but, you know, they're just not in a position to make any sort of moves that, you know, they could overachieve and win, you know, 6-7 games. They were, what, 3 wins last year? I'm trying to look. Yeah, I found that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, their offseason maneuver. It's funny how, like, you overpaid for Glennon, you screw up your draft, and then Mitch looked good in the preseason game, and it's like everybody forgot about that. But Bears fans on Twitter were, oh, they were in love with that performance. And to be fair, he looked good. You know, you're not, you can say you're playing the second defense or third defense or whatever it was, but he seemed poised for a guy that started like one college game, apparently. You know, people are really ripping the how many games he played in college, but I mean, some guys just get it. He looked okay, and, you know, time will tell. We haven't seen him play that much yet, and, you know, temper your expectations. But I wrote down bright spot. Howard had 1,300 yards somehow on a 3-1 team.
This is a team that can run the football. They have some talented run blockers on the line. I like their run scheme. John Fox knows how to run. He knows how to, that's one of the handful of things that I'm willing to say positively about John Fox. Otherwise, I do not like John Fox, and I think he probably needs to be relieved of duty at some point in the next year if the Bears are going to be serious contenders for the North one day. But I think Mitch could surprise people. It's funny that Mike Glennon got paid, what did he get paid, $14 million to play for the Bears, and he's probably not going to be the starter more than, what, 3 games this season, if that. And meanwhile, Cutler walked away from the franchise, and he's getting paid $10 million to be the quarterback in Miami. So that's a funny situation where Mike Glennon is getting paid $4 million more than Jay Cutler. The Bears have a strange ownership general manager situation going on right now, and I'm not sure it's going to work out in the long run, but we'll see. It was funny though that the general manager moved up, drafted Trubisky, gave away picks to get him when no one else was going for him, and then lo and behold, ostensibly seems like he surprised John Fox by making that move and making that pick.
Yeah, he had no idea that was going to happen. Like, I would have at least, like, prepped myself to be like, yeah, I knew that was happening. That was our plan. Because it doesn't look good from the outside when those guys apparently weren't talking about what was going to happen there.
From a betting angle, I'm with you. I don't see any reason to back them to win anything, to make the playoffs. Their win total looks a little too high at 5.5. It's juiced to the under. I'm not interested in looking at the under there either, because that's, you know, you're squeezing out, you're going to be sweating some of these kind of lousy matchups they have. I'm getting a little sense that people are kind of whispering that they like the Bears week one hosting the Falcons. You got any thoughts on that?
What is that, 7-ish?
Yeah, right now it looks like it's Falcons by a touchdown, but I could see that drifting out to 7.5 or so, unless this kind of sharp perception starts to pick up some steam.
I guess I haven't looked real close at that, but that number just feels about right. Unless you see, I mean, if you you can see Glennon and or Trubisky hanging with Maddie and the boys.
No,
I definitely see, if not by the beginning of the season, just that rough stretch at the beginning, if they go with Glennon, I think it'll be Mitchell. He wants to be called Mitchell, and that just doesn't sound right. He's gonna be, you said Mitch, I'm gonna say Mitch too. I think everyone's gonna do Mitch, that. Yeah. So yeah, that's just sorry, bud. But you know, hopefully he doesn't listen to this.
Mitchell's a last name, not a first name. Sorry. Exactly.
So if they get off to a rough start and Glennon's just getting, you know, pounded by the Pittsburgh defense, and a couple of weeks later Minnesota rips him up, and
There's not an obvious spot to slide him in. There's not.
You don't want to throw him to the Wolves and, you know, like, we're going to Baltimore and you get to start.
Oh, you're on the road facing a top-tier defense that we don't know how to prepare for because we only play them once every 4 years. Good luck. This is an interesting point. I think my main betting angle on the Bears heading into the season is going to be looking for opportunities to back them on the under. And I mean the under total points scored in a lot of these games. They are the kind of team that if they can put together a competitive, competitive start to some games, they're going to lean heavily on their running game. They're going to eat clock and they're going to reduce the number of possessions that you see in a general game. So I think you're probably talking about a type of team that should be getting 43s and 44s as totals, but will probably be getting 47s and 48s because people perceive them as bad. So looking out for unders on the Bears is going to be probably the angle I hit on them the most. The only other betting spot I see for them, they got a nice spot to try to shock the Vikings week 5. I still think the Vikings probably win that game, but I'm guessing that the Vikings will probably be a touchdown favorite in Chicago week 5. And I think the Bears are going to have a little something special for them on that game. Bears get some extra rest after playing Green Bay on Thursday night. Minnesota is going to be looking ahead to their first meeting with the Packers. So that's maybe one of, I don't know, three times I'll probably, maybe one of one time that I back the Bears all season.
One of one time. Detroit, who they play twice, obviously, was one of the teams that had a lower place per game last year too. Whereas kind of looked at that too as far as maybe backing. You got two games where you could look at an under. Cleveland obviously runs the ball a lot. I'm imagining that late in the season, with the bookmakers looking at a whole year of film on those teams, that could be like a 34.
Yeah.
When you got Cleveland coming into Soldier Field, Christmas Eve, the weather's bad. That could be a very ugly game unless you like watching defenses and inept quarterbacks.
I hear you, man. Well, that's about all I got for the NFC Norse. Another great pod. Great job, Andy.
Yep, we'll see you in a few days.
All right, bye-bye.